Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Instone Real Estate Full Year 2020 Results Conference Call. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Burkhard Zawadzki, who will start the meeting today. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining our full year 2020 earnings call. Our CEO, Kruno Sepulja, and our CFO, Fuwa Majlessi, will walk you through our presentation, which now also includes an ESG section. As usual, this will be followed by a Q&A session. With this, I'll hand over to Kruno Sepulja.
Good morning, everyone. I'm glad you could join us for our fiscal year 2020 earnings call. We are all aware of the fact that 2020 was a very special year for all of us, with a clear priority to protect the health of our employees, customers, and suppliers. As you know, we already published our preliminary full year results at the end of February. Therefore, you have seen that overall our business model has proven highly resilient during the pandemic, but also that we still have to cope with a few temporary challenges. There has been no tangible impact from the second lockdown on our sales and construction activities, and the profitability even exceeded our expectations of 2020. And as we have also pointed out before, we expect this positive margin trend to continue also in fiscal year 2021. Now let's start our presentation with the highlights on page 4. As already pointed out, the key lesson from the crisis for our product is that German residential as an asset class has become even more attractive. This holds true for private and also institutional investors. The recent volatility in bond markets did not change this picture. Rising inflation expectations could instead actually become a catalyst for additional demand for our product. On the construction side, we did not see any meaningful impact from the pandemic either. Here, our investments into hygiene measures beyond the legal requirements might have contributed positively to this. The main risk factor we are seeing currently, which is not in our hands, is the overall speed of the approval processes in the different municipalities. You know that our somewhat more cautious top-line growth outlook for this year is attributable to this special situation. We believe that we have now factored in decent additional time buffers, and therefore we are not expecting any additional downside risk from here at this point. In 2020, we have also strengthened our basis for future dynamic growth. We have acquired 7 land plots for projects with an estimated sales volume of around 800 million. And also during the first weeks of 2021, we have been continuing our growth path with the acquisition of another project in Herrenberg in the southern part of Germany in direct neighborhood to an existing Instone project with an expected GDV of some 70 million. Additionally, we have signed exclusivity for several also larger projects. Apart from managing the impact of the pandemic and the execution of our growth strategy, we also invested into the implementation of our ESG strategy. We have built up our internal processes and we have set ourselves ambitious environmental and social targets with a clear objective to be the leader for this crucial future topic in our industry. We are building up a roadmap to become CO2 neutral with our products by 2050. We will elaborate further on our ESG strategy later during this presentation. Let's have a brief look at our financial KPIs. Our adjusted revenues amounted to 480.1 million. Apart from the temporarily negative sales impact from the first lockdown period, the comparison with the previous year's level is somewhat distorted by the impact from the large Westfield project in Q4 2019. Our gross margin stayed at a very high level of more than 30% at 30.5%. This exceeded our adjusted expectations of more than 28%. we have experienced a certain tailwind from improving price momentum, from the sales mix, and also from somewhat easing cost pressure. Moreover, this clearly reflects the quality of our project portfolio as well as the strong execution capabilities of our platform. Our final results for adjusted earnings after tax is 41.1 million, and therefore clearly above the former adjusted guidance range of 30 to 35 million. In addition to the mentioned effect from the positive development of the gross margin, this was also supported by somewhat lower platform costs despite investments into future growth. It's important to mention that the 2019 figure did not only benefit from the Westfield project, but also from a significant positive one-time tax effect. Our bottom line result forms the basis for the payment of our first dividend of 26 cents per share, corresponding to a payout ratio of 30%. Coming to our outlook, we reiterate our recently updated outlook for 2021 with adjusted revenues in the ballpark of 820 to 900 million and adjusted earnings after tax in the range of 90 to 95 million. The earnings after tax is also the basis for future dividends. At the current stage of our steep growth path, the payout ratio is expected to stay stable at 30%. It is our intention to combine both, keeping equity in the company for the financing of our promising future growth plans and offering a reasonable cash yield to our shareholders at the same time. On the following slide, number 5, we provide you another summary of how COVID-19 currently affects our different business areas. I think we have already discussed the most important items. Over the last quarters, you have already become familiar with our chart that shows our sales performance on the weekly basis. You find this on chart on slide 6. This chart clearly underscores that demand for our product has shown a strong and stable recovery back to pre-COVID levels. Unlike during the first lockdown period in spring, there has been no major impact from the second lockdown, which currently still persists. The sales ratio also during the last month stayed at high levels above our long-term mean. This positive trend has also been continuing during the first months of 2021, although this period traditionally suffers from a somewhat weaker seasonality after the year-end business. The same positive trend we can confirm for institutional sales. In the last weeks, we have sold 2 projects to institutional investors with a sales volume of approximately 200 million euro. This is clearly a very positive signal, and it provides additional reasons for optimism regarding our future growth outlook. Within our sales activities, we witnessed a positive momentum for HPI growth, especially in Q4. We were able to achieve prices above our initial budget with positive momentum during the ongoing marketing phases. And this holds true for the private, but also for the institutional business. On slide 7, we provide a summary of market data points we have collected. Although there's quite a wide range, all market surveys point to an at least mid-single HPI growth for 2020, a year with an overall deep recession in Germany. On the financing side, we have all ultra low rates at record lows and good availability of debt for residential investors. These two factors are obviously very supportive for the demand side. The recent volatility in bond market had no material impact on mortgage rates. Average rates climbed only marginally, maybe by some 10 basis points, and they remain well below 1% for 10 years. The indications of interest we are currently seeing from institutional investors point to another strong 2021, and we share the view that there is headroom for further yield compression due to the demand situation. The structural demand-supply imbalance in the German housing market and the lack of defensive investment alternatives in bond as well as in most other real estate segments as the structural headwinds for office, etc. persist, remain the drivers for this. The recent spike in bond rates, which caused some volatility in capital markets, currently does not play any role. As already flagged, rising inflation expectations could actually serve as another positive catalyst for the demand side of real estate assets, in our view. We have seen a close to mid-single-digit HPI growth in the last quarter 2020, and it could also be a realistic scenario for 2021. But please keep in mind that due to our pre-sales, this will only partially feed through to our 2021 numbers. Moving to our portfolio section on slide number 9, also in 2020, we have successfully expanded our pipeline for future growth. You know that we have raised around 175 million of fresh equity for a step change in growth to reach an annual revenue target of 1.6 to 1.7 billion. The launch of our value home product is supposed to be a key driver for this. Our land acquisitions in 2020 represent an expected future gross development value of around 800 million. This includes projects with a GDV of some 200 million earmarked for value home. As at end of December, the total GDV of our project pipeline, excluding joint ventures, reached more than 6 billion. This forms a very solid basis for our predicted growth in the coming years, but we clearly do not stop here. In Q1, we acquired another project in Herrenberg in the catchment area of Stuttgart in direct proximity to one of our existing projects. This project has a GDV of some 70 million. We will further speed up our investments in the coming quarters. We have exclusivity agreements for 6 projects with a total gross development value of more than 1.5 billion and plan to invest into land in the ballpark of 300 million to up to 400 million each in 2021 and in 2022. Slide 10 provides you a breakdown of our current project portfolio as of the Q4 reporting date. This is made up of 52 projects with more than 13,500 residential units. Almost 90% of the GDV is in the most attractive metropolitan areas of Germany, and the remaining part is in very attractive B cities. On the right-hand side, you can see a breakdown of the current development status of our portfolio. Of the nearly 6.1 billion of GDV, around 2.6 billion is already under construction or pre-construction, and thereof 2.3 billion, or nearly 90%, has already been sold. This secures a high level of visibility for our expected sales and earnings growth in the years to come. With that, I would like to hand over to Foruha for the financials and the ESG part.
Thank you, Kruno, and good morning, everyone, from my side. Let's dive right into the numbers. Page 12 shows our adjusted results of operations for Q4 as well as fiscal year 2020. As Kruno has explained, our fourth quarter benefited from a highly supportive operating environment characterized by continued strong demand from both retail and institutional clients and robust pricing underpinned by favorable financing conditions. As a result, we have successfully concluded Q4 customer sales contracts for a total value of almost 250 million euros. More than 50% of the aggregate fiscal year figure and in line with our Q3 projection. This is translated into Q4 revenues as predicted and total fiscal year revenues in line with our guidance. The strength of our final quarter is evidenced by the stronger than expected gross margin. Institutional sales prices towards the upper end of our expectations, a retail sales mix geared towards our higher margin projects, and to a lesser extent construction cost benefits have all contributed to our full year gross margin exceeding 30%, a highly satisfactory outcome. Platform costs have increased moderately, albeit quite a bit less than originally anticipated. Savings relative to plan have come from lowered general and admin costs as well as aggregate variable compensation in line with 2019, despite an increase in the average number of employees by more than 15%. The contained platform costs combined with our strong gross profit margin have allowed for our EBIT margin to remain at previous year's level, despite a year-on-year revenue decline of almost 35%. Finally, as previously indicated, our IFRS tax rate of around 31% can be considered as the midpoint of our normalized expected tax rate going forward. As you will remember, previous year's tax rate benefited from the first-time recognition of a deferred tax asset in relation to tax loss carryforwards. and is therefore not comparable. Over the page, you find our 2020 sales and revenue split by customer, showing 39 and 42% respectively to come from institutional clients. As we have previously explained, we intend to increase the share of institutional sales. In the current environment, with institutions keen to increase property exposure in general and residential exposure in particular, most suitable projects attract institutional pricing that is absolutely competitive with retail pricing, with the added benefit of much reduced working capital requirements. Based on ongoing conversations, we can expect to achieve institutional sales amounting to at least 50% of our targeted aggregate 2021 sales. Page 14 provides a good summary of our financial strengths. First, our year-end loan-to-cost ratio of 26% indicates ample investment capacity. Bearing in mind all our inventories are booked at historic costs with substantial hidden reserves, this number has to be considered highly conservative. While LTC will increase going forward, we do expect that figure to not exceed a moderate 40 to 45% at any point over the medium term. Positive operating cash flow and strong margins have led to a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 2.8 times despite the COVID-related depressed 2020 revenues. For fiscal year 2021, we expect this figure to remain at around 3 times. Our ability to act fast and demonstrate to any potential seller our financial strengths has proven to be a relevant competitive advantage in new project acquisitions. We are benefiting in a number of concrete off-market discussions where we have quickly been awarded exclusivity. Turning to page 15, the numbers underpin this point. First, we have achieved an impressive positive 225 million operating cash flow pre-new land investment despite a substantial COVID-19-related revenue shortfall. The cash flow generation proves the strength and attractiveness of our existing project portfolio. As you know, we have embarked on a substantial acquisitions well in excess of 300 million for each of the next 2 years and up to 400 million per annum. Despite a resulting negative operating cash flow, the investment will be supported by positive cash flows from our existing projects in a similar order of magnitude as last year. Second, we boast ample liquidity. Cash at hand and undrawn lines add up to more than 350 million available corporate funds. In addition, our project financing lines will cover essentially all of the remaining construction costs related to our in-construction projects. Against this background and bearing in mind our financial position as reflected on the previous page, I would like to reiterate that our midterm growth targets will be achieved without any incremental equity requirement. In fact, our existing portfolio will generate cash flow sufficient to fund our ambitious growth target while allowing Instone to pay a dividend at the same time. Moving to page 16, you find our prospective NAV as of December 2020. Remember, this is the NAV we would expect our portfolio to generate for us if we were to develop the entire pipeline to hold. As you know, this is based on assumed HPI of 1.5% and CPI of 3.5% per annum. Let's have a quick look at our fiscal year 21 outlook. As already published with our preliminary figures, we expect to achieve revenues of 820 to 900 million for 2021. The slightly lowered number versus our previous risk for some of our project launches to be postponed owing to COVID-19-related delays in required approvals, including completion of master planning processes and building permits. Our gross margin expectation of 26 to 27% reflects the continued strong pricing environment, as well as a somewhat less favorable sales mix, as a few of our highest margin projects contribute a lower share of revenues compared to 2020. In line with previous statements, we do guide for 90 to 95 million of after-tax earnings with a view to once again distributing 30% of income as dividend. Finally, we expect to conclude sales contracts in excess of 900 million across our project portfolio. Please note also we are starting the year with quite a strong pre-sales figure, with about 50% of our targeted revenues already secured, assuming construction progress in line with plans, but no further sales. Finally, as summarized on page 20, we are happy to provide an update on the work done and our ambitions as they relate to ESG topics. We have defined clear responsibilities for this important initiative all the way through the organization and up to the board level. I will oversee and, together with a group of senior business and operational colleagues, drive the continuous development of Instone's ESG initiative. On that basis, the Instone Executive Board will be able to make strategic decisions to move forward and implement further steps with a view to position Instone as an ESG leader in our industry. As part of this initiative, we will focus on achieving a set of targets as published in our annual report and summarized on the next page. We also intend to solicit and publish an external sustainability rating still this year. I will quickly summarize our key climate-related targets, as well as a specific social topic where we feel well-positioned to make a difference. However, we are committed to all relevant considerations and targets across environmental, social, and governance goals. We fully support the Paris Climate Agreement, as well as the German federal government's 2050 Climate Protection Plan. Consequently, we plan to achieve complete CO2 neutrality of our buildings by 2050. As an interim step, we want to reduce CO2 emissions by 50% until 2030 from our current annual emission of 11 kilograms per square meter. It is worth noting that the average CO2 emission of standing buildings in Germany is about 3 times our current emission figure and 6 times our 2030 target. In addition to further improved insulation, the CO2 reduction will come from a substantial increase of renewable energy sources in our projects. Furthermore, we intend to analyze the CO2 footprint of our production process, evaluate the impact of alternative building materials, and define clear targets for improvements. Finally, addressing the social impact topic I was referring to earlier, we intend to make a real difference to many low to middle income households by massively expanding social housing and affordable housing projects in our portfolio. To that end, we are committed to increase the share of social and affordable housing to 50% by 2030. With our innovative Value Home product, we have already developed the required tools to achieve the price and rent benefits for our end customers. I hope this does provide a first impression of this important initiative. I will pause here and open up the call for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Then we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 0 and 1 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 0 and 2 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. And we've received the first question. It is from Thomas Neuhold, Kepler Cheuvreux. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the presentation and taking my questions. I have a couple of questions, and I think it's best if we discuss them one by one. Firstly, you said that the demand from institutional investors has increased over the last quarters. Can you share a little bit your experience on what kind of institutional investors want to increase the exposure to German residential buildings? Is it mainly local German institutional investors or also international investors increasingly active in the market? And what is a typical institutional investor? Is it an insurance company, foundations, etc.? If you can shed some light on that, it would be interesting to hear.
Hi, Thomas. Sure. So we are seeing mostly German investors. I would say from the type of investors, there was no change. So we see the insurance companies, we see also property owners,
all the other types of investors we've seen in the last 12 to 18 months.
Okay, good. And then on the current market environment, can you elaborate a little bit on how the competitive landscape has evolved recently, particularly for new land plots, how are land prices developing in light of rising residential property prices? And can you also elaborate a little bit on the demand and supply situation in your core markets? Are markets still undersupplied, or do you think there's a risk that in some markets the supply will increase strongly in the next 1 to 2 years?
Starting with the competition for land, overall, I would say it's still a bit lower than before the pandemic start due to high-level developers currently not acting, being before the pandemic really aggressive players in the market. The land prices currently are starting to rise again, in line with the HPI growth we are seeing also in the market. And looking at demand supply, I would say that, you know, there are two facts underlining our optimism here. First, usually you have a very, I would say, weaker January and February months at the beginning of the year, but you can see that we have still very high binding quality for owner occupier business and also buy-to-let sales activities. Additionally, I mentioned already that we recently signed two institutional sales very early in the year, and we see from all the different groups a very strong demand and clearly a demand supply imbalance, which is driving the market. But also, I would say institutional buyers focusing more on residential than they have been focusing before the pandemic started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the demand supply situation, especially supply, any additional comments you can make there?
You mean regarding the offers in the market? I would say that we still have this, you know, significant supply-demand imbalance. Has there anything changed? I would say the offers haven't really increased, and this is still the driver for the HPI growth, which started again, which we commented on already in the last quarter. So that's what I can say.
Okay, understood. Thanks. And the last question I have is on ESG. You mentioned that you're also reviewing the possibility to use alternative construction materials. I think that's quite important because more and more people are looking at life cycle CO2 emissions. And I was just wondering what kind of materials you're currently reviewing and what you think from a technical point of view the challenges are, and also from a financial point of view, how would a greener production process and using greener production material impact your construction costs? Can you say already something about that, or is it too early?
Well, I would say it's the beginning of a process and a journey, and there are some lower hanging fruits where we can probably make decisions nearer term. One example is the question of plastic versus wooden windows, insulation materials, but eventually the plan is clearly to understand the full supply chain and the full sort of cradle-to-cradle use of material, including the recycling. But again, that is not anything that we can promise for this year. It will be a journey that we're starting now, and the review will start with understanding on every step of the supply chain where we stand, and then on that basis, taking decisions that have to be balanced between making progress on the sustainability side, but also, you know, retaining our competitiveness clearly.
Mm-hmm. Fair point. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from Thomas Rothäusler of Jefferies. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning everybody. Another question on ESG, maybe more from a top down. Maybe you could elaborate a bit more. What are the key benefits? What are the key risks for your business? I mean, your positioning, you know, with a new product versus landlords, maybe with the old stock. Maybe you can provide us some color here, how you look at it.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we completely embrace the idea of making sure that you know, businesses have to become or emphasize more the sustainability a part of their business. I think we can also say that we feel very strongly positioned here, as you rightly point to, you know, our new buildings, as I elaborated to earlier, right now, versus the average standing buildings, our CO2 emission is one third of that number. Also, if you look at our value home product, I think on the social side, we're extremely well positioned to support low and middle income families, as I said earlier, to either find apartments at affordable rent prices, or even, you know, be able to buy their own property, whereas with the existing supply, that is very difficult for many. These are two key aspects that we think we have a lot of good things to say, and where we focus on where we have to focus on communications. It also includes the number of social housing projects that we already have in our portfolio, and the public infrastructure that we supply in terms of streets, but also schools and kindergartens. So the starting point is to look at everything we have, but also bear in mind where we can improve. And that's there are also lots of things where we think we can further improve, and we can further emphasize, you know, still keeping the balance between economic success and supporting sustainability.
Hmm. Maybe I'll follow up on this. I mean, there's this new KfW program. I think it becomes effective mid of this year, and it considers all the cash subsidies now, I think, of up to above 30,000 euros. What I understand, depending on the efficiency class. Could this be a relevant driver for your business?
I mean, I think you have to look at this in aggregate. There are subsidies, but the costs for achieving the building standards also are slightly higher than they would otherwise be. Also in terms of the end investor, they want to get their share of the subsidies, and also, you know, there is a choice of either getting the benefits as part of the construction or getting the benefits as a buyer. So you know, we think that net this will be a neutral effort. We will certainly on that basis be able to increase our share of KfW 55 and better standards without negative impact on our margins, but we don't think that there is much upside either.
Mm. Okay. Maybe a last one on politics and regulations. I mean, we see one project here in Frankfurt, which is heavily in the focus of local politics. And just an example, maybe you can elaborate what's your view in general on politics and regulations, now it might impact your business.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the recent elections in the two federal states clearly confirmed the positive trend of the Green Party. And without speculating how a potential new federal government after general election in autumn could look like, I would say there are two major political topics, climate protection and affordability. As Holger mentioned, I strongly believe that we are providing the right answers to these questions. We are the innovating leader for housing in the mid-price segment, and we have also a strong commitment to build highly energy efficient properties. with a higher share of renewable energy supply. So therefore, I think for us overall, I see more opportunities than really threats going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Pascal Bauer of Stifel. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning all. First of all, you already touched on this, but just to make sure, you are very confident in your midterm guidance. So there is, in my understanding, no further impact from this approval delay for 2022 and beyond. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. We have built all of the potential risks into our guidance.
Okay. My second question touched on the value home. In my understanding, you already have one or two projects going on right now. Can you give us an update about that? And have you seen any weaknesses or things that need to be fixed for the future rollout, or how is that going?
So currently we have overall five projects in the value home business with gross development value of more than 200 million. For two, and these are Duisburg and Düsseldorf, we start construction in August this year. And what is very positive that the costs we have calculated and we make we finish the tender process for these two projects, we are absolutely in line with our calculations, which is good. Regarding the demand, we also started for, we sold the project in Düsseldorf. We currently negotiate with institutional buyers the Duisburg project. And additionally, we have, I mentioned that we have exclusivity for six projects with a total gross development value of more than 1.5 billion. Of those, more than 400 million are dedicated to value homes. So we do here also very good progress in acquisition. So overall, I would say we are in plan and it works quite fine, and the product is staying in budget. Demand is strong, so all the lights are green here.
Okay. Final question: in looking at your balance sheet, the financial receivables have increased quite significantly from almost zero to 155 million. Is that just due to the ramp up now with the sales kicking in, or are there other reasons?
That includes 145 million of liquidity investments that cannot be booked under cash and near cash items.
Okay.
So essentially for us it's cash.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Philipp Kaiser of Warburg Research. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hello everyone. Thanks a lot for taking my question. Just to start, if I understood it correct, so 50% of your target sales room are already secured. And you have currently exclusivity of six projects, the expected sales room of up to 1.5 billion. So assuming 20% land acquisition cost, that would result in 300 million of investment. So if you execute all of these projects, you would already reach your acquisition target in 2021. Is that right?
The numbers are right. I mean, on the first point, I would just clarify that you probably know we are recognizing revenues on a percentage of completion basis, mm-hmm. and therefore the number assumes that no further sales, however, construction progress in line with our plans.
Mm. So, to sum it up, it's a very strong start into the year.
It's a very strong number. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And then so the current guidance reflect the increased risk of regulatory approval delays and in light of the current pandemic. Are there already real postponements of projects, or it's just the planned buffers are getting smaller and smaller due to the uncertainty?
Yeah, in our bottom-up forecast, we put the one or the other projects with revenue recognition into 2022. And this is a way how we reacted, which means that there is now sufficient buffer for further delays, as Folua mentioned.
If your question is whether there is upside from processes working faster maybe than we anticipate, I wouldn't sort of count too much on that.
Okay, understood. Thanks.
It's a pretty realistic assessment, I think, of where we are.
Okay, perfect. And 2020 on the profitability side, you also mentioned that you benefit from a lower than anticipated construction costs, and this should also affect 2021. But could you shed some light on when we might expect these pictures change? So, for example, the steel prices have been rising since the beginning of the year. So, and this when the new construction negotiation for the construction work may affect the cost basis in the coming years.
Yeah. So you know that our assumption of is 3.5% CPI growth. In the last years, this has proven to be conservative, and for this year, I would say there are two opposing trends. First, massively increasing material costs. You mentioned it already, due to a combination of substantially reduced material production and a pickup from recent thoughts in demand for raw material. And on the other hand, we have, the lower demand for construction works due to the impact from Corona and the decreasing demand for commercial real estate and increased available capacity. So I think for this year, I expect the 3.5% is sufficient. Before the material costs went up significantly, I would say that there has been a decent buffer. Currently, I would say there's no really noticeable upside. If the material cost evolution goes further, it will be compensated, but there is no noticeable upside for this year.
Okay, and so for the years to come, so it's developed the same dimension as in the recent years.
I feel very comfortable with 3.5%. And I also think that it's a temporarily, let's say, uplift of material costs, which will normalize. This is what we have seen in the last decades, that there are peaks and then normalizing situation.
Yeah, that was it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. At the moment, there are no further questions. So as a reminder, to ask a question, you would have to press 0 and 1 on your telephone keypad. We haven't received any further questions, so I would like to hand back to you.
Yeah, thank you for your participation. If you have further questions, please do not hesitate to contact the IR team also after this call. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.